dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. Really excited to be back with you here after a week off. 2 weeks ago, had our basketball preview show, and really want to thank the fans. I know when I was checking out some of those numbers, it was on pace. I'd have to really check with Bruce to see the final numbers. I know it was on pace to be possibly our biggest show yet in our 3-year history, and so we want to thank DBK Media Services for all they do, and want to thank you, the fans. Want to say hello down in Ripley, as well as all the way out in Illinois. I know those are some of the different things we had in our feedback this week. Had a chance to talk to an official down in the Ripley area who I used to stay in close contact with here close at home. He and his family now living down in that area says he tunes in every week and he loves it because it keeps him up to date on what's going on here in the Cider Valley Conference. And then had some extended families of some of the SVC families able to listen all the way out in Illinois and keep up on how their family members are doing back here close to home. So love that. Encourage you to subscribe to the show. Just go on DBK Media website there and type in your email, and then you'll get an email in return. You'll simply accept that. And then every time we do a show, you'll get a notice that a new show went out. So over the holiday season, I think the reason I mentioned that, I think that's really important because we try to stretch our schedule out to give you every opportunity to hear as much basketball as possible. So as always, Jeremy, I know I was excited to get some of that feedback. I know you're constantly getting some face-to-face feedback and some different things where people have comments about not just SVC, but a lot of times SVC Sports Talk and what we're doing here on the website. Just talk to me a little bit about some of the feedback you're getting that's really caught your attention.
Well, you know, the biggest thing that continues is just in regards to officiating, that you've drawn special attention to me through Liar Liar Stripes on Fire, and now there seems to be a lot of conversations that deal with officiating, and like I said, most of it's good, and you know, like I said, I'm rather new in the officiating game and just trying to learn and improve and get better. So it's really helpful to me to really consider different aspects and kind of put it all together and, you know, encourages everybody to kind of look things up and to clarify rules. And that's always a good thing. But, you know, I don't really think it's the rules that are in question. It's just the interpretation and how the games are managed. And, you know, when you get almost a month, you know, at least 2 or 3 good weeks of watching the college game and seeing all the differences in the way they want the game to be called. There's a lot of anticipation kind of for the first weekend of the boys in particular to see if it was going to hold true with the boys as it has with the girls in the college game, and just having some of the different things come up as far as style and what crews are calling and when they're calling it.
Well, I think those are some really interesting points. I know I want to touch on a few things later, and I have some questions not only from fans but for myself and just things I think will be great discussion. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Before we move completely on, Jeremy, from our basketball preview show, we had one email that had come in about a day later after our show, and it was referring to the preview. I thought we would touch on that real quick before moving on. The email says, after attending the boys SVC preview Friday night, I was left with one thought. Why do we even bother having a preview? I know that it is tradition and all leagues do it, but I still ask why. The majority of those in attendance are families of the players that will see them throughout the year. Very few times will the teams put the 5 starters on the floor at the same time, and no one runs any offensive defensive sets. And most of all, it is really ugly basketball that no one gets anything out of. I know this may not be the popular opinion, and if I am missing something, please let me know. I just think it is wasted night, and teams are missing a night of practice for basically no purpose. So I appreciate the feedback in the email. This is something that's come up in several sports, not just girls and boys basketball, I know, and volleyball as well. I guess the easy thing to tell all fans that's real, real simple is money, money, and money. Would be the three reasons why this is going to continue to happen. There's no way around that. And now in the SVC's defense, I'll say this. The awards that they buy, the different award ceremonies that they put on, they definitely do it better than most. I know sometimes I'm critical of the league, and I don't even know if critical is the right word. I try to get people to take a look at, hey, let's make sure we're moving forward to make sure that we're always doing it the best. But nonetheless, they do that. Yeah, Jeremy, this got us talking. I know you and I have had this discussion for a couple years now. With money being the obvious answer, is it just something that we have to put up with a couple hours every year, or is there something else that we could possibly do? You know, I thought about a competition night. Could each school have a representative in a three-point competition in between the second and third game? Could you add media to the night? I know we've even talked about it with our website. I know I was out watching a game in the extended area a couple weeks ago, and I caught the Southern Hills League boys where they're on the radio the entire night, and you hear from the coaches, and I guess you could even expand it to a couple players if you wanted. What are some of your thoughts when you think of maybe ways to – maybe just spice up a little bit, make it more interesting for the fans in the league?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, it mentions May not being a popular opinion, and I really feel like the negativity that's come with the previews is the popular opinion anymore.
Right.
So you do have to look at it. You don't just do things because that's the way you've always done it. If that's your best answer, you know, you really have to reexamine and think about what you're trying to accomplish. And, you know, if money is the determining factor, are there things that you can do, adjustments that you can make to kind of swing it back in a positive direction? Because I think really ultimately that's what's has to happen. You know, we just need buy-in from the schools and the fans and the teams. We need something to spin it positively so that people get excited for it. I still think the fans get excited because regardless, when they walk out of the gyms, you know, they're still talking basketball, and they're talking the next day, and they're talking the next day, and they're emailing us, and you know what I'm saying. So that it's accomplishing its true intent. The true intent is just to get everything kicked off, to get everything started, and get everybody thinking about basketball and excited about basketball. I think that the biggest downside this year in particular is the fact that it happened before Thanksgiving. It actually was on a school night, because most days, you know, if that's the Friday after Thanksgiving, you don't necessarily lose a day of practice. So it's just an extra. It's not an instead of. So you don't necessarily lose, you know, you don't lose a scrimmage anymore. You know, you get your scrimmages plus a preview. That's an option. So you're not making a choice. It's not handcuffing a coach as far as that goes. So, you know, I do think you can look at it that way. If you want to have some sort of contest, you know, if you want to find a way to honor somebody,
good idea. Yeah.
Maybe an SVC Hall of Fame or just an award of merit for maybe service. You know, the OHSAA does that at the state tournament. You know, longtime bookkeepers, longtime clock keepers, longtime custodians, people like that that are kind of behind the scenes, gives you an opportunity to maybe recognize folks like that that have been played a large role in a program at a particular school. So there's plenty of ideas out there to kick around, but I think again, it's just, you want to get it back to a positive mindset for everybody coming in instead of just, oh my, we've got to suffer through these two quarters.
Well, and I think the phrase that really caught my attention was the really ugly basketball. And I think we're going to talk about that, you know, coincidentally in two or three other sections tonight. So I won't beat the dead horse. We'll kind of refer back to this. But fans, before we do move on, we want to hear your thoughts. Obviously, as Jeremy said, this is more the popular opinion than we probably want to admit. 469-3254. And I wanted to say, really take advantage of that phone number. I know a lot of you, you know me well enough or know the website. We're not going to put your name out there. I think that's why the inbox is so comfortable to you. And we definitely appreciate that. We have some really intelligent stuff come in. But again, if willing, 740-569-3254, really like to have the audio, to get more voices, on the show than just Jeremy and myself. Well, I'll say this, Jeremy, we're going to talk plenty of basketball throughout the show, but first, we had an incredible email this past week. It is sure to have some opinions, and in some cases, maybe some that will have players, coaches, and fans from multiple SVC sports that will force some heated discussion. So fans, stay with us, because I promise if you like SVC sports, you will have an opinion. Well, Jeremy, I want to stay in the inbox. I tell you what, this is a great email. It's kind of a lengthy one, and usually I try to shorten them up a little bit. But for the sake of discussion, I want to go ahead and take, even though it might take a minute here to read it, or so I think it's really important to let the fans hear the actual email. It says, I have a question that has really made me think over the past 5 or 6 years. I spent all of my childhood and even the majority of my adult life in the SVC, but I now reside in another part of Ohio. This is why I love the show so much, because it gives me a chance to stay up on all things SVC. My question / comment is this. I know you guys talked about SVC volleyball being so elite around Southeast Ohio and very competitive throughout the state. Now I just see football and basketball, and it says both boys and girls, as very average. I guess you could say baseball and softball have proven pretty good throughout a larger area, but why is it that volleyball is so much better than the other sports in comparison to the surrounding area? And just, this is for some reason, when I started to go through the inbox and I saw this one, Jeremy, just really made me stop and think, and for days now I found myself just, you know, driving down the road or sitting around watching TV or watching a game, or, and it just kind of made me think about this a little bit. And there's probably some of my opinion that's not going to make certain people happy. You know, when I guess with volleyball, I think the Laura Smiths and the Lori Cokers and Aaron Reidenauers and on down the line, Tina McGills, I think they know me well enough to know that I'm the biggest supporter of SVC volleyball. So I think I can get away with saying this without making them too upset. But I need to step away and defend the other sports a little bit for just a second. I think this has as much to do with what's being compared to than the actual comparison of SVC sports. And what I mean by that is this. It's not as much comparing SVC volleyball to SVC basketball as much as it is comparing the competition that the email is referring to the competition that's in volleyball. And let me, for example, in the Southern Hills League, there is a culture where they love their basketball a great deal. You grow up from a very young age. You're not going to a football Friday night. You're basically spending your fall waiting, when's winter get here so we can be in the gym 5-6 nights a week.
Right.
And I think that is a level of competition that is just hard to separate. What's your first reaction? There's two or three different ways I want to go here, Jeremy, but I don't want to dominate the conversation right up front. I wanted to first just get your reaction before I ask you two or three more specific questions.
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, the first direction that I went when I first saw the email as well, in terms of comparing apples to oranges, because basketball in the SVC, and the you know, the best comparison to that would be the Southern Hills League. You know, I think basketball overshadows everything else in the SVC, and I don't mean that in a negative. I think that is, you know, a connection for a lot of people and for a lot of schools that I think they pride themselves on, you know, on strong basketball, whether it be boys or girls, and, you know, even, you know, regardless of what they're like in terms of, you know, football or any other sport. The Southern Hills League, by not having football, you know, they do. You know, their basketball season lasts a little bit longer. It starts a little sooner. And, you know, you see that. You see that with the homecoming games. You see that with the atmosphere. You see that with the rivalries, because it's not just one or two rivalries down there. It's every night, every school in the league rivalries, especially the schools that have been together since the inception of the league. But I think it really forces you to think about a lot of things. It forces you to think of socioeconomic factors. You know, what sports are more readily available? Little league, and like we've talked about, how early you start playing sports and when it's available to you. You know, is it available to you as a 5 and 6 year old? Is it available to you, you know, as a developmental thing, or is it more competitive right off the bat? And you know, that's where I go immediately. Is it seems like with volleyball in particular, there's a lot more development that goes on at the young ages in volleyball in this area that leads the competition, whereas I think in a lot of the other sports, the competition comes right along with the development, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And soon as Jeremy mentioned Little League, you probably had half our listeners thinking, oh boy.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
No, but honestly, I'm not even going to go that route here right off the bat. I'm actually going to go more to the junior high school level. I guess there could be a little bit of Little League age involved in this, but you talked about when is it available to kids. I think our area is so far ahead in, like, say, club volleyball compared to like an AAU basketball. And I know it wasn't always like that in the 90s. I know there were some different opportunities for our ladies to get involved in closer to home AAU experiences in the past. But I think that the statement that I truly will stand by the most is basketball is simply harder. It's harder to play. It's harder to be good at. And if you don't get introduced to it at a young age and stay the process, there's no catching up, I guess, is the point I want to make. And what I mean by that is if you have a kid in volleyball is more of a skill-specific thing where you can find your area. And I guess the easiest way I can describe this was be – imagine if Elena Lytle had to block Amanda Curry at the net, or imagine if Amanda Curry had to play clear across the back row no matter who the opponent was, or imagine if a 140-pound kid had to play offensive line, or if the 325-pound guy had to go out on the corner and cover one-on-one. That's what basketball is. Regardless of who you are, you have to dribble, you have to pass, you have to catch, you have to be able to run the floor, guard people. You have to do every skill. So I think what happens a lot of times is what you're talking about, Jeremy, is basketball being so much harder to develop that if you're not getting that opportunity to start young and fall in love with the game, you're going to have a hard time ever catching up to the point. I guess I'm just absolutely amazed when I look at some of the elite players in our league that can't create their own shot going right and left, or some of those things. So I can't fault the email here. They had given credit to baseball and softball, which I think is very fair. They've given credit to volleyball, which I think is very fair. Unfortunately, being a basketball junkie the way I am, if I'm being objective, the email's right. And it's something that our area really has to take a hard look at. And I think it starts with Little League, but I also think it starts with player development as we move forward. Real quick, Jeremy, let me throw this at you. What would you like to see done at the junior high and high school levels in the off season if you had your perfect scenario? Do you love the team camp concepts? Do you love the return to more individual camps? What is it that you think is maybe missing in the off season for kids, or is it just simply them not being willing to put the ball in their hand?
Well, I think it comes down to the individualized attention, and you know, I think you're onto something there. I don't know that I would explain it or go about it the same route that you do, but you know, my mind kind of shifts to a pitcher in softball, a pitcher in baseball, a catcher where you really have to devote time outside of the regular practice day, outside of games, to be good at that specific skill. And I think that's the same in volleyball, but you can embrace that. You can embrace your strengths. I think that's what I think that's the main difference. Whereas in basketball, I think because your physical development maturity doesn't necessarily match your skill development maturity, it can be convoluted. You know, if you're that early developing 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and you're in there in the post, and you're a little league coach, you're practicing something that is good for the time, but maybe not good for you as a basketball player. So then what happens as you move on and become a different kid, you know, a different body?
Right.
You know, did you get all the time, all the ball handling drills? You know, I think it really comes to the approach. Are you willing to develop those skills? You know, can you jump stop? Can you pivot? Can you put the ball in your hands? Do you know that it should never touch your palms, regardless of what position you're playing or, you know, what you're doing with the basketball, just those simple fundamental skills? Or are you running plays, playing games, and all that sort of thing? There's not a lot of pickup volleyball games going on, you know, if you think about that.
Right.
There's not a lot of pickup baseball and softball. If you're going to work on it outside the season, it's not that type of open gym. It's skill development open gym. Whereas in basketball, hopefully the steps they've taken that lead to more individualized instruction with the workouts, you know, gearing towards 3 or 4 players, you'll get back to a more skilled, a more fundamental game that makes the finished product look a lot better. And I don't mean that to be critical in basketball, but I just think, you know, you have to be awfully good and you have to execute awfully well if you're not physically gifted in basketball. You're just not going to get away with things in a game that has become up and down, and everybody's got to be able to do something with the ball, like you say.
But wouldn't you agree, Jeremy, that in volleyball, and this, even if I'm talking about a fifth grader or an eighth grader or a tenth grader, you can get away with maybe developing some skills more in the game setting than you can in these others? You know, if I'm going out and I'm playing in volleyball and I'm on my club team and I play, you know, all the way around, or at least play the position that I'm pretty much set to play, I'm getting an opportunity to serve every six. The rules give me an opportunity to serve as much as you do. You know, I'm going to get my opportunities to be in the – my biggest thing on the Little League soapbox is – You're not developing multiple ball handlers. You're not developing multiple scorers or multiple post players, and that's where some of this comes from. I think you make a great point about, remember when we were growing up, just the natural learning that comes from open gym, learning how to play together. And if I go back to the original email tonight on the show, the ugly basketball in the preview, well, they've always split combinations and they've always put different people out there, but – I think there used to be more kids that could dribble, pass, and catch, and they just understood how to go out on the court and play, where nowadays I don't know that that's as true, and I think a lot of that comes from there. So without spending too much time on this, the one last thing I do want to ask you, because I think you can give us a neat perspective here, Jeremy, is this. I use the terminology that basketball is harder. I guess now I want to ask you, is volleyball more of a – what's the word? I guess, just for lack of a better word, is it fun? If you were to ask, you know, girls, if you had your daughter grow up and then you watch kids in class that you might work with, or you as a junior high AD, or would you say that a lot of times – I guess I'm using the terminology that basketball is harder to play, it's harder to learn, it's harder to master, if you will. Is the game of volleyball probably more fun to some of our younger ladies throughout our SVC area?
I would say that it is, and I've talked to, you know, a lot of kids that you would just assume that they like basketball better, or they like, you know, softball, or like whatever it might be, that just absolutely love volleyball. And, you know, I think maybe something that we didn't hit that feeds off of that, and I think it's particular to girls and coaching girls and raising girls, that they have certain mindsets, and when they get their mind a certain way, you know, they're very focused on that, and it's the mental aspect of volleyball. And I think that's where I see the similarities with baseball and softball, where, you know, you have to have a certain amount of mental toughness, because at some point in time, all the eyes are on you. Whereas it's not quite that much in basketball or football, where, you know, there's more to watch. There's more going on, but the ball only finds you in your position in your particular spot, which puts a lot of pressure on you, because there's nobody else to blame, so to speak. If you don't get your serve in, it was just you and the ball. You know, If you can't throw strikes, it's just you and the ball. There's nobody else to blame. That puts a lot of pressure, and it brings in that mental challenge of it. And I think that's part of it too. I think it's the physical mental combination, and it's not just I'm, you know, 6'5" and 210 pounds.
Yeah. That's a nice point here as well. Individually, fans, I really want to get some feedback on this. Again, that number 740-569-3254, and the inbox is admin1. So that's admin, the number one, at svcsportzone.com. Please let us know what you think. I thought that was just an incredible email. Great discussion, and really want to get some feedback. Well, I'll tell you what, let's put the preview and the other talk to bed and talk about the games that count. I know I enjoyed watching a lot of basketball, boys and girls, the past couple of weeks. I saw some things that I would label expected. I'd probably label some others unexpected, and then some that still have me a little unsure. She stood in the street, smiling from my head to her feet. I said, hey. Well, Jeremy, one of the other things from the preview show that had a lot of opinions coming in and people talking to me at games about a lot of different things was the scheduling. And you know, I know coaches are always talking about taking care of things that you feel like you can control and doing those things. And I think what we're starting to find is with schedules, some coaches make it all, some make some make none. You know, that probably has a lot to do with your relationship with your administration, how long you've been at a school, and so forth. And I think the schedule is not only who you play, but when you play them. I know there's been some Facebook comments, the big school, small school discussion, the time of games. I know there's been a lot of discussion, Southeastern boys and Piketon girls not opening all the way until league play. So, there's just been some real intriguing things. I know I saw Vinton with Vinton County. I know Paint Valley went to Vinton County, to Piketon, to Zane Trace, and they were going to go to Memphis on Saturday. So they're going to play those four schools on the road in a six-day period. That was just one that caught my attention. I know Huntington girls played Lynchburg, Westfall, Uniota in a four-day stretch. So obviously schedule can play a big role. As you looked at some of those things, Jeremy, and some of the feedback we're getting there on the timing of games and so forth, and now with you have the weather and some of the rescheduling, what do you think, maybe even give us a feedback from an AD's perspective and a coaching and how difficult it is to balance the two sometimes?
It's interesting because I was reading an article earlier today, and I actually talked to a guy from Athens County yesterday. It was just really aggravated that everybody canceled their games at noon on Friday. And I guess that's one of those things where you don't always know all the factors.
Right.
You know, we talk about the season starting earlier. You know, there's a lot of other things going on, whether it be, I mean, this is the time of year for, you know, honor society inductions and, band concerts and things like that, that might affect some of your players, might affect, your facilities. So I think, again, everybody has their own perspective. You do have to take in consideration, I think, from all aspects, from an administrative aspect, from the coach's aspect, and thinking about, you know, what you're doing to your athletes at the same time. So I think you really have to put all that together, and you just got to juggle it, sort it out, and make it fit the best you can. I think the 22-game schedule has become the bigger challenge because I think schools, like you mentioned, not starting out till league play. Well, you could do that with the 20-game schedule because you're going to have those weeks where you may only have one game. If you have a stretch of 3 weeks where you've only have one game each of those weeks and then you run into the weather later on, there's no place to put them, and you're really putting yourself in a terrible spot. So, you know, I'm going to go back to your first comment, taking care of things that you can control. As a coach, you know what? Once that schedule is printed and it's put in front of you, that's what it is. You've got to buy into how you approach it. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it once it's there. You know, look at Ohio State football. 5 years ago, that schedule didn't look that bad. Look at how much it changed, how the conferences have changed, and how that dictated the way things play out. You don't have any control over that. You just play the game in front of you. If it gets canceled, you make it up. And you really can't put too much time into letting those outside factors consume you, because if you take that to practice, the kids take it to practice, the kids take it home. Now, all your mindsets are all over the place. You know, your kids are all over the place. Just let the administration take care of what their job is, the coaches coach and the players play, and you really just have to go with, you know, what's in front of you when they turn the clock on.
Well, you know, Jeremy, again, I don't want to spend too much time on the scheduling, but again, the feedback's been so incredible. I want to go ahead and talk about one more thing here. I've had so many people ask me, and then what was so unique about this is you even had touched on this with me on my opinion the other day on the phone about the Friday-Saturday schedule of the boys. And I got to thinking, you know, I'm old school SVC, so I love the Friday-Saturday boys. But as from a girl's perspective, I'm sure that sometimes you don't like Tuesday-Thursday, and only when do you really go hard in practice? When do you really string practices together? I don't know the answer to that. I know that someone mentioned, is it time maybe if we're not going to do that with the boys, do we need to put junior high on Monday-Thursday? Maybe have the girls go Wednesday, Saturday, let the boys go like a Tuesday, Friday. I mean, that's at least a nice suggestion, at least something to think about. What I guess I'm so used to the Friday, Saturday, it doesn't faze me at all. I loved it as a player. I didn't even mind it as a boys coach. Jerry, what's your take on the Friday, Saturday in the SVC boys?
Well, my only question to the way it's set up is, why is it only part of the time? Why is it only Friday, Saturday half the time? And then, you know, the other half the time you only have a game on Friday. If you have 7 weekends to play Friday, Saturday, and that's what you do, then that's what you do. I don't really understand, you know, where you kind of get jumbled.
Right.
Because I think it does shift, you know, then you have, you know, certain schools shaking their head. Well, I got to play these two back to back, and I've got to play this team, you know, both times we play them, it's back to back. And, you know, when we have these three other games that, you know, they're the only game that week, you know, how does that shake out? That really can affect a league race. Whereas, you know, if you truly play your league games every Friday, Saturday, then, you know, if you play Friday in the league, you play Saturday in the league, and that would make sense. So I can see that. You know, I've been on a lot of sides of this. As a girls coach, I hated playing on Monday. I didn't think that was fair. I didn't think it was fair to have to consider practicing on Sundays, and it certainly wasn't fair to have
some schools just won't have it.
Right, and at the same time, do you want to have your pre-game practiced for a big league game on a Saturday morning because the boys play Saturday night? You know what I mean? It's
sure. Oh yeah.
I thought that was a huge disadvantage, and I worked to get rid of those Monday games because I thought that was putting kids at a disadvantage. But again, you know, at the end of the day, You can fight for that outside of the season, but you know, right, once it's time there, you have to deal with it and leave it to people like us to debate that you know, don't necessarily point. Have to deal with it.
that really is a good point. That's a fair point. And let's talk about a little bit of the dealing with that. I know in the girls this past week, we went Tuesday, Thursday, and you know, Jeremy, if I'm going to headline the girls, since we talked last, we have three teams off to a 2-0 start in SVC play, and I know Adina and Penny Valley feel like they probably played half their schedule and probably would have if it wasn't for some weather. And I guess if I was going to headline it, I would say time will tell. And the reason I say that is with the schedule to this point, I don't know that we've totally had all of the matchups we need to see. I know that some of the teams picked in the middle there, Paint Valley, Piketon, Zane Trace, they went head to head. But those were at Pike and at Zane Trace with the home team winning. So, again, you've got to let some things play out. Is there anything headline-wise that jumps out at you on the girls' side, Jeremy, as you watch the first week unfold?
No, honestly, what comes to my mind is just, you know, ho-hum. I don't really think there's a lot of surprises going on. And like you say, I think with a lot of the teams that are going to be jockeying for positions in the middle of the league, it's really going to have to, you know, go through until the first of the year before we can start to sort things out.
Well, from a surprise perspective, I guess I'll throw one at you, and I wanted to get your take on maybe why this is the case. I know if you take the eight total SVC games that have been played, the 16 teams that would make that up have averaged 46.5 points a game, and the losing team, taking the four losers from Tuesday and the four losers from Thursday, are averaging 32. And I guess as I look to a future, or what I'm anxious to see as I look ahead here, is if that trend is going to continue. I think obviously defense continues to be a premium, but at the same time, offense is a premium because it's showing you that if you're just capable of figuring out a way to get 40 points on the board, you're going to have a chance to win. And I think in most cases, if you check out the Good Health Chiropractic Center SVC scoreboard on the girls' side, I think you'll see that to be true. What, from a scoring perspective there, Jeremy, do you maybe attribute that to? And moving forward, does that maybe give you a particular thing you're looking to watch for?
Well, you know, a couple of things that come to my mind is, number one, the amount of kids and the amount of teams that we had playing volleyball deep, which, you know, gets you started later. I think then you have the tendency to maybe rush some things in, and then for these schools that have you know, a bunch of games early on, they're really getting worn out. And I think you can relate back as a player. You get really excited. You have that point in the preseason, you know, where your shot feels good, your legs feel good, and then everything's kind of wearing on you. I think the danger is, you know, you push. And if you have a lot of games early, sometimes, you know, your shots just, you get to that point where you're just a little bit out of whack, until you can settle back in and almost get your second wind. So I see that as being a little bit of a factor, especially as much as we talked about the experienced guards coming back. You thought we would probably get a little more consistent scoring, a little better scoring early on. So,
yeah. Well, I do think that the depth is a huge factor there because, you know, you look at a Westfall team that just scored over 62 straight games. Miller, mm-hmm. Fox, Mathis, Robinson, Stone Rock, Conrad, all those kids can score double figures on any night. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Coach Blue send me a recap of a game where any of those kids were in double figures. Both Overleys and Cox, very capable 15 to 20 on any given night. Even I think White's been in double figures already, not to mention Nelson and Thiel having two mm-hmm. more six-footers to play with. When you look at the other rosters, I think the difference is those other rosters are looking for, can we get at second and third consistent score? I know there for a while, Paint Valley was getting some three-point shooting to go from Armstrong to go along with Stanforth. Huntington was getting Gregg and Cox, but maybe not on the same night together to right. go with Sam's. But the one team that did jump out at me was Zane Trace, because I think Edler scored 20 in a game already. We know how good Straw's ball is. Well, then the other night, Pontius hits the four threes and scores 16. So wouldn't you agree that maybe the difference right now, if we were to label a difference on what to look forward to between the top two teams and the other teams with Pike and trying to stick their nose in there as well as a Zane Trace, might just be which team can get the two and three scores to consistently put the basketball in the hole?
Right. I think that's a good point. It's either having three scorers that you get, you know, something out of each quarter, and people think about that, it's you know, well, it's not that big a deal. Well, if you score in every quarter, then, you know, if you score a field goal in every quarter, then you have at least 8 points. And if you can look through the box scores, there's not a lot of times where the third scorer has 8 points in the girls' games, and there's a lot of times where there's not a fifth scorer. You know, you think of it as far as that goes. So a lot of times there's not even five kids that score in the game. And that really puts pressure on your top, you know, two kids to carry you. So any time that you can get, you know, 5 to 7 players in the scoring column, and you can get 3 players that are scoring in multiple quarters, 3 or 4 players that are getting to the free throw line, you know, to me that's a big deal too. And looking at the box scores, if you've got multiple kids getting to the free throw line, then you've got more opportunities. You're sharing the ball. You got a little more continuity, and like you say, that depth really, I think, will separate, you know, the middle of the league and who finishes in that top half.
Well, I don't think there's any question, because you look at the hot start Southeastern's off to with Wheeler and Goble and Heist giving them that, even Mitten doing some nice things. Coach Skaggs really doing a nice job improving that particular team. I know they had a 29-point second half the other night. So just getting the ball put in the hole. Well, I guess I'll ask you the same types of questions, Jeremy, on the boys' side. If the one headline that jumped out at me, I wanted to get your take on, was winning with weather. It caught my attention that Southeastern, under a new head coach, was going to have to go through a long preseason and then open with Uniota. And with Uniota coming off such a big loss to a really good Valley team, I just knew Coach Hoops well enough to know what type of week of practice they had, and I thought that was going to be an extremely tough opener for Southeastern. And now, not playing that, Southeastern kind of is able to step back. If I'm not mistaken, now they'll play the 5 schools in the SVC with Uniota and Zane Trace in the back, unless there's that makeup in there. Was the makeup right date set here in December?
Makeup is on the 21st of December.
Okay, well, so I'm corrected there a little bit, but it is bumped back a little bit, a couple weeks down the road. So I thought that was a key point. I also thought it was key for Huntington. Huntington was going to have a tough one at Paint Valley. I thought that set up really well for Paint Valley. I thought Huntington benefited with the weather because they were able to step back, host Westfall on a Saturday night, get a much-needed win for this group of kids that are playing together, maybe get their confidence going. Paint Valley had to then go on the road. They gave up 70 points to Piketon, and now they're going to turn around and play Monday night. So by the time you're listening to this show, that game might have already been played. Just your thoughts, Jeremy, on the boys' league. Obviously not a lot to evaluate yet, but anything that surprises you or headline there that jumps out at you?
Well, you know, headline-wise, you know, I was able to listen to the first part of the game on the radio and then make it to the tail end. Why wait? Just getting right at it with the Uniota St. Trace game, and it was just incredible atmosphere for an afternoon game, and you could see why they wanted to move it, not compete with Ohio State. And you could also see, as soon as that ended in overtime, that people just flooding out the doors to their car too. So you know, that game didn't disappoint in terms of the atmosphere or the level of play. You know, people, again, you can call it sloppy, but just an incredible matchup, you know, when it's all said and done, and big plays, and you know, you know, that's where there's really no surprise. I suppose the biggest surprise is getting all this weather this early in the year. It really kind of makes you step back and kind of worry how it's going to play out and what happens, you know, with the reschedule. It looked like most people were trying to get those in quickly on the front half of the season, which I think is a big deal, because you just don't know what you're going to get.
Well, I guess I benefited from the weather more than most, Jeremy, because being the basketball junkie I am, with Zane Trace Uniota moving up, it allowed me to go there in the afternoon and then head over to Huntington to watch Huntington Westfall that night. So I was able to get 4 SVC teams in one day, which obviously you normally do not do. And I'll tell you what, a very physical game. Some people labeled the Uniota Zane Trace game ugly. I guess it was, but I think that's a little unfair to the players, because just I think the way the game was called was just as physical as you're ever going to see. And then I was intrigued to watch Westfall Huntington that night. Yeah, like I said, a really important win for Huntington. Westfall, Dylan Anderson and Chase Anderson there playing really hard. The Wyman kid, the freshman point guard. I think they have some pieces in place. But Huntington really had a nice balanced effort from their 5 starters there. And Shanks was really good with Hall in the first half. And then Sarver and Kello got it going. And then the Shoemaker kid just gives them a lot of hustle and tangible. So really, really a fun day of basketball. And I guess as I look forward on the boys' side, the number one thing I would ask you is, do you have a certain number? If I were to give the fans something to look forward to, do you have a certain number in mind on where you think this league championship could fall, Jeremy, or is it too early?
I think it's a little bit early. I just still, though, I think you look back through historically, and you know, you'd really be scared to predict anybody having more than two losses and winning it outright. And I mean, yeah. I do think, you know, especially with Zane Trace winning on the road at Uniota, they put themselves in a nice position. I think Piketon has a very difficult schedule early on, both non-league and league-wise in terms of getting to that matchup. And Zane Trace is really, you know, it's almost like winning two games when they came and were able to escape with a one-point victory on the road at Uniota. So I'd say they have the best shot if somebody's going to go, you know, either run the table or have one loss. You know, they are probably the only team that can do that.
Well, Jeremy, this is the point in the show where we speed it up a little and we try to mention as many teams, players, or headlines as possible. Jeremy, you'll start. I'll follow. So let's get out and transition. Let's go to the fast break.
After the early season action, who are players who appear ready to have a much bigger season than anyone might have thought in the preseason?
A couple names that pop up after the first weekend. Anderson at Westfall obviously had a nice night on Saturday. And I think also you throw in Hutton at Zane Trace. A lot of fanfare to you know, his post players and his guards around him and some of the younger players in the league. But I think he quickly showed how important that senior leadership at the point guard position is and how, you know, he's really a difference maker. On the girls' side, I think you look at, you know, a player like Logan Goble, who's got some varsity experience now, settled in, able to, you know, be a shooter and an outside threat. Put up some points and stretch defenses for the Panthers. And Faith Pack at Piketon, especially with the absence that they have right now with Jenkins, she's really going to have an opportunity to do some things. And athletic kid, plays with a lot of energy. And, you know, I think those are some kids that are difference makers.
You know, on the boys' side, Jeremy, I had a chance to watch him on film once and then watch him the other day over at Uniota. I think the Dottillion kid, he's an animal. He's got a good motor. Really gives that team a nice addition in the post. Obviously, over at Southeastern, there's a lot of talent with Miles and Heiss and names that you'll hear a lot. But I've always been a big fan of Jordan Allen. I think he gives them a lot of intangibles. And speaking of intangibles, I thought I'd even throw in Lucas Sarver of Huntington. He's a kid that at about 6'4", can do a lot of different things. On the girls' side, I know we mentioned two teams that have a lot of depth, but probably the two kids that get overlooked a lot would be Fox over at Westfall and then Taylor overly at Uniota. I think Fox is a kid that I use the term motor a lot of times in basketball. She just never stops. She's a kid that's on the floor. She's on the offensive glass. She'll beat you in transition. Maybe a kid that's overlooked sometimes when you're trying to match up with their talent. So she's oftentimes in a favorable matchup. And then we mentioned in volleyball, Taylor Overly, just her physical improvement. She just seems so much more confident. She just seems to have a better burst of athleticism than a year ago. And she can really play. So she can hit the three and score in transition as well. So those are two girls I'd keep my eye on.
Overreacting is easy to do this early in the season. Which fan base needs to make sure they do not overreact based on the early season outcomes?
First thing that comes to mind on the girls' side, I think Huntington and Westfall both, with their early season schedules, their records might be a little more than deceptive. So I'd give it a, you know, 8 to 10 games in, because I think both these teams are a lot better than they have been, for sure. And you know, just the early season results are not indicative of that progress or where you're going to see them turn out at the end of the season. On the boys' side, I think you look at Paint Valley's got a tough stretch starting out in the league with, you know, Piketon, Zane Trace, and Uniota in the first 2 weeks. And Piketon the same way. They have a brutal non-league. Already played Bloom Carroll, play Valley this week, two of the best teams in the southern part of the state. And then they've got a league game with Uniota Saturday as well. So I think, you know, with the boys, obviously, we have to kind of look in the future a little bit more with this because, you know, there haven't been a lot of games played. But, you know, I wouldn't put a lot of stock in the first 2 weeks of the season with any of those programs.
Well, Jeremy, I'll start on the boys' side. I'd probably say Uniota. Now, I know there's a difference between not having the urgency necessary, but then having panic. And, you know, Uniota comes out and they're playing Valley and they're playing Zane Trace, two teams that wouldn't surprise anybody to be playing for district titles, maybe even into the regional come later in the year. But I know just from listening to Coach Hoops the other night on the scoreboard show, when he was asked about their shooting problems, how do you fix it? He said, you fix it by guarding somebody. So as I watched their team's effort on the defensive end on Saturday, even in a 1-point loss, he had to be much more pleased giving up 57 in an overtime game than he was giving up 51 in the first half against Valley. So with the athletes Uniota has, I know Coach Hoops well enough to know they're going to really focus at the defensive end. And if they do that, I obviously know it's go time for them, but I think they're going to respond. So I wouldn't overreact there. And then on the girls' side, I thought you made some good points, but I'm going to go Paint Valley. I mentioned earlier in the show, Jeremy, that they came out played two games in the Classic against Eastern Brown and Waverly, two solid programs. And then this past week, again, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, at Vinton County, at Piketon, at Zane Trace. They were even scheduled to go to Memphis. So at some point, I think that schedule is going to start to stretch out a little bit, get a little bit more practice time. I know they've even been through one or two injuries that that have hurt their depth a little bit. So I think the Lady Bearcats still have their best basketball ahead as well.
An email this week was saying they most enjoy when you guys talk about actual coaching strategies, and this fan wanted to know, what can impact these early season games the most that coaches wish they had more preparation time to cover?
Well, I think to some extent that depends on the type of team you have, you know, whether you're a new coach or whether you have a lot of inexperienced players, or on the flip side, have a lot of experience coming back. You know, that really kind of dictates where you spend your time. But as a coach, I think the end of game execution really suffers. I think we've seen that a little bit. Sometimes that's tough to cover until you've actually experienced it in the game. Then you can go back and you can simulate things and the kids know what you're talking about. And I've really seen some of the younger players just not handle that very well to this point. The other thing, I think zone offense and zone defense, particularly if you're not a team that plays zone defense, it's awfully hard to, you know, simulate a zone offense or a zone defense when it's not something that's really part of, you know, your identity.
That's a great point, Jeremy, because I think a lot of times it may be some skill work or some rebounding drill here and there or whatever it is, time and score situations. But you make a great point on if it's not who you are, like if you're a man-to-man team, sometimes playing zone or working against zone can be very difficult early in the year. I would probably say time and score, though. And this is so much to each team to get used to, and recognizing situations and foul situations and who you want to attack, or, you know, maybe at the end of a quarter. For some teams, depending on your personnel, like if you have Zane Trace's backcourt in boys basketball, you might be able to hold for one shot for an entire minute. But if you don't have the ability to handle the basketball, maybe your time times 25 seconds, maybe it's 35 seconds. So I think there's a lot of different things there, but I think the time and score situation would be the one thing that you'll see a big improvement in once coaches have a couple films to look at with their kids and a couple extra weeks of practice.
Let's talk scheduling. Give the fans a must watch in the upcoming week.
Well, I tell you what, this is probably my favorite week of the entire season. And it only comes around twice a year, and that's the all-day event. And just because Shane likes it so much, I mean, that excites me even more. But no, seriously, the Piketon Uniota matchup in the all-day, I think that's an interesting matchup for the girls, kind of to see where Piketon is and to see if they're one of the teams that can challenge Uniota. And obviously, you know, you talked about maybe a sense of urgency for the Uniota boys. You know, Piketon's going to have a tough week before they get to that point. And you might have a couple teams that are, you know, just absolutely duking it out. And I think you're going to have an exceptional day of basketball next Saturday.
Well, I'm obviously going to go a little earlier in the week the Boys Friday night, Uniota at Huntington, I think that's an intriguing one because, again, Uniota's really at a go time necessary, and I think it's going to really prove something to Huntington as well. They're always going to be really good on their home court girls-wise throughout the week. I know West Falls at Zane Trace, Piketon at Southeastern, Paint Valley on Saturday. I think the girls matchup there could be a really intriguing one because, again, as I mentioned a second ago, Paint Valley's had such an incredible schedule. They're going to be finally return home here and have a chance to play, and then I think the boys game with them playing at home on a Saturday night there, I think Paint Valley is going to be a tough team on their home court this year. So I think that would be one of the all-day matchups that would intrigue me. Well, fans, you can let us know through Facebook and Twitter or, as we said earlier, 740-569-3254. Let us know your thoughts and comments on anything that we're talking about here on SVC Sports Talk. And our final segment of the night, as Jeremy mentioned earlier, we always get to one per week with Liar Liar Stripes on Fire. Jeremy, is really impossible for me through face-to-face conversations and emails to narrow it down to just one. So I tried to just really what the fans want to hear us talk about the most is this new focus for the officials in terms of the fouls, and I'd mentioned free throw shooting being so important. And Jeremy, I'll give you credit because you talked about how you didn't know how consistent it could be at the high school level for these crews to get on the same page and call it as tight as some people thought it was going to be called. So as I grade the officials to this point, you know, I think the officiating of the games I've been at has been pretty solid. But by no means has it been consistent across the board. I just, before I ask some more specific questions, Jeremy, I just wanted to get your take on some of the games you've had or that you've watched in terms of have you noticed any difference, I guess, is my first question.
Well, I've definitely noticed a difference. And, you know, maybe the most intriguing thing is just how everybody's conscious of the rules and of the changes. And they're either looking for something that's not there, or their expectations are here. You know, I think the inconsistencies in your expectations alone can be a challenge. Maybe an interesting point. I know it really struck me. I went to a college game to watch one of my former players, and when I was talking to her after the game, that was the first thing she wanted to talk about was just how different it's been from one night to the next, and how she loved the fact, you know, as a smaller player and as a shooter, that they were calling illegal screens more consistently and they were not allowing the hand checks, that it was giving her a better chance to be successful. But how difficult it was to go from one night where it was absolutely all or nothing, and then the next it was kind of a little more lax, and how hard it is for players to adjust to that. So, you know, I think that's going to take a while to settle in, and you're still going to have crews that, you know, are going to let a little more go around the basket, and crews that are going to let a little more go out front. But I do think there is a conscious effort to clean the game up. I listened to Thad Mata's call-in show last week, and he made a great point about that because he's been one of those guys that, even though he focuses on defense, he's really big on not fouling and being in the right position. And, you know, fouls are mistakes and fouls are a sign of weakness, in his words. And I think when there's an awareness of that, instead of just thinking about, I'm going to push it as far as I can until I have to hold back because the officials are going to call, instead of pushing those limits, you're thinking more about playing the game and defending the right way instead of seeing how far you can get before you have fouls called.
Well, I think the fouling's an interesting basketball thing to look at from a coach's perspective, because I think for the bottom half of the league and boys and girls, is you're trying to keep your best players on the floor. And I agree, as I watch some of the best teams defend, it's their ability to guard you without fouling. I know Uniota girls the other night were tremendous. The game I had a chance to see them play in, they fouled three times in the first 27 minutes. And I'm telling you, they were just really solid in their positioning and their length and where they could get to on the court. And I think a lot of that comes with experience. And I think I wanted to ask you this question, though. From a standpoint of atmosphere, does an official get a influenced by the intensity in the gym? Because the reason I asked that is I went to the Uniota Zane Trace game, and it was just absolutely an incredible atmosphere. It was intense. Then I went to the Huntington Westfall game, and it had a decent feel to it. It had a decent atmosphere, but nothing near that. And I just noticed a huge difference on how the physicality went way up and they kind of let more go compared to – I thought the Westfall Huntington game maybe was called a little bit looser or tighter. I'm sorry, tighter. And I just wondered from an official, does the atmosphere ever kind of dictate the way that the officials are going to set a tempo that night, in your opinion?
I know some of the best advice that I've received from some of the veteran officials is, you know, just the ability to slow down. And, you know, the same thing your coach would tell you as a point guard, when the atmosphere rises and the tension rises a little bit, things speed up for you. And you just have to slow that down. And I think you certainly can get caught up into it. And I think sometimes when you have two really good teams and the intensity's high, I think sometimes the officials, they don't want to get in the way of that, and they want the game. They want there to be flow in the game, and they don't want to become the focal point. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why that happens, you know, and also it's early in the year. You don't know with the weather, did you have somebody filling in, or was a crew maybe, you know, are they not as comfortable with each other? Because I know there was some people, there were some issues in some of the scheduling this year with the league games, and you know, around the area, not just the SVC, but around the area, where you might have some guys that aren't working this year, aren't officiating, so you have some diversity in the crews, and you have some situations where you might have some people that aren't as familiar working with each other, and that's gonna cause inconsistencies, and that'll work itself out. Just like, you know, if you have three new starters on your team, it's the same sorts of problems are going to exist.
Well, Jeremy, I know we're starting to run out of time this week, but there's one more thing I had down here that I really wanted to throw at you, because I talked to two or three really true basketball fans about over the last week. They were asking me from a coach's perspective, and I said the one thing I always like to do is find out in advance who the officials are, and I try to give, you know, my kids, if I'm coaching, a scouting report on the officials. Hey, I anticipate the game being called this way. And it's one of those things where is it fair to kind of look at an official? You as an official, do you feel like you have a certain style? And I know the textbook answer is probably for you to say, well, I just try to have the rule book and call the rules or whatever. But do you think officials, some naturally just look for more of a physical game, where others look more to call it tighter? Is that a fair scouting report comment that I'm making there about officials?
I would say that, you know, there are probably some people that you would categorize as being, you know, more by the book, by the rules dictate, and other guys that more, we're going to let the flow of the game determine.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm asking. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, but I think the one constant that officials attempt to do, whether they're able to do it or not, you know, and I can look at myself when I say that, is, you know, you just hope that whatever you call in the first 4 minutes of the game, you're able to call the last 4 minutes of the game, and you don't, you know, you're trying to maintain that consistency. And if you feel like, you know, you have a bad first quarter, you know, there's certain precedents that you've set, and is it fair to mess with the players? If you know, like you said, you're trying to prepare, and you know, if somebody shocks you by coming out and calling three quick hand checks on minimal contact and no change of direction, it kind of, you know, throws you for a loop, and then there's nothing else called the rest of the game. Did he just have a bad couple minutes? You know what I'm saying? It really can affect the official. It affects the players. And so I think it's fair to say that there are guys that look for particular things or have a particular style. But, you know, I think it's the official's job as well to prepare for the teams. You know, you like to have a little bit of information on the teams that are playing, so you kind of know what to expect. You know, I think sometimes, you know, you just have to be careful. You don't want to, you know, I think there was a comment made yesterday. If Duke was able to bring, you know, Coach K's basketball officials to the football game. That was the only chance they had to beat Florida State. but you know what I'm saying, whereas sometimes, you know, people, they really get aggravated and they don't want the officials to call it differently because there's a perception about a particular team. But as far as pressing and style of play and watching for an excessive amount of screening, teams that run a flex or a continuity offense that might be screening, well, you need to be aware that you're, you know, the center official is going to have to be looking for illegal screens and making sure their feet set and they're, you know, they're not outside their body while they're setting screens. That's a lot bigger deal than somebody plays a wide open dribble drive type offense where there's not a lot of screening.
Right. Well, really good stuff as always. That's always one of my favorite segments of the show. The Liar Liar, Stripes on Fire is what we call it. Let us know your ideas. You can email us or you can call us 740-569-3254. Let us know your Liar Liar, Stripes on Fire question, comment. We'll throw it in the show there and put Jeremy on the hot seat, so to speak, Aaron, and let him comment. As I look back through the show, we had the preview conversation, the conversation of volleyball compared to some of the other sports around Southeast Ohio, the scheduling, the boys basketball, girls basketball, our fast break discussion. So fans, let us know, and we'll be sure to include you in the show. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for all the other sponsors on our website, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.